We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Again, kind of like I said about our defense, and I guess it can kind of pertain to the whole team as well. At the end of the day, our objective is just win games, no matter how we get it done. You know, if the score is 100-99 or, you know, 0-2, as long as we're on the winning side, you know, people can say what they want. We won the game, so that's our only mission, is just win the game. That's pretty much it.
I get it, and as a defensive player, I can certainly understand that coming from him. I don't think that's the case when it comes to the Bears' offense, and Matt Nagy doesn't either. Winning the games is great. You won four of them of your five, but at some point, this offense has to be good, or at least not what this is. And that was the thrust of this week, and that is what I hope the result is, as now you get a little bit of a break as far as the matchup goes. This isn't the Colts defense. This isn't the Bucs front seven. This is the time for the offense to shine. But there is some mystery surrounding Robert Quinn, to be kind. He signed a five-year, $70 million contract on April 1st. It's a big splash, and you could see why, because as recently as last year, he had 11.5 sacks, and he had 10 sacks in 2012, 19 sacks in 2013, another 10 in 2014, and 11.5 last year, and you know what he's supposed to do. You know why he's here, to add to a line that already has two of the best at their position, two of the top three or five, in Khalil Mack's case, one or two, at what they do as far as internally and at edge rusher. And you'd think that his production would have been commensurate to his previous production, at least just plopped into whatever this is here and all of the talent around him. And it hasn't worked. It's not happening. So first, I want you to hear from Chuck Pagano as he talked about Quinn's adjustment to the Bears' defensive system.
We want to keep, expanding on that. I think that's pretty much it. We've got, really good room in there. Ted does a great job with that room. With guys like Mingo and Vodders, that can come in and give you really quality reps. In certain specific, situations. So want him on the field as much as we can, but we're going to be, going to be smart with it. He's still learning the system. It was hard with, via Zoom and the offseason and not being, here and having the OTAs and all those kind of things. He's still playing a little bit of catch up, but that's not an excuse. But I think he's well on his way to, getting this thing down pat completely.
It is an excuse. And what system does an edge rusher really have to learn? How can that be a stumbling block or a headwind in any way for an edge rusher? What I know that there's different terminology, and occasionally there's a twist or a stunt or an edge set responsibility against the run. But for the most part, the system is run over to the quarterback and throw him on the ground and don't get a penalty. Draw a holding penalty every once in a while. And he mentions Mingo and Vodders, and at times they've flashed off the tape more than Robert Quinn has. I don't want to hear that, what is he, 32 years old? Coming off an 11.5 sack year, that this is, again, related to a system or a process? Come on. No. No. We did have some odd excuses early on because he just wasn't playing. And they said it was like a non-injury absence, or he just wasn't available, and they weren't being clear. We don't know if he was sick or if he was hurt. And then there was an ankle injury on the injury report. But for a while, he wasn't practicing, and no one explained why he wasn't practicing. Until then, he was, and then he was playing, and he had a great first play. And then that was kind of it. Well, he mentioned Ted. You heard him talking about Ted Monachino, who has the outside linebackers, has the pass rushers, as his positional responsibility. And one thing Ted Monachino talked about this week was the ideal number of plays for Quinn to be playing right now.
Well, we know where he plays best, Pat, so we're going to try to keep his numbers around that number. It's somewhere just north of half the snaps. That's where we're trying to keep him. There are times in the game when he needs to be out there regardless of situation, and those are the times that we use him in those roles. But we also know that his dominant trait is rushing the passer. We want to give him as many opportunities to do that as he can. But we are keeping very close track of his rep count and trying to keep him as fresh as we can. So if we do run into 2-minute situations at the end of the game, he and Khalil both are as fresh as possible.
So what do we take from that? Is it a conditioning issue that's ongoing? Is he substandard against the run and they're trying to put him in positions where they know he is going to be a pass rusher more than a run stopper? This is all very strange that you lay out $70 million for a guy who now has to be this tightly managed. So a little more than half the snaps. Well, how does that sit with Quinn himself? Does he agree with that?
I mean, what's my ideal playing time? I mean,
yeah, for you to be most effective.
Well, whenever I'm out there, I should be effective. At least that's my mindset, no matter how many snaps. So, I mean, the rotation's been working fine. I mean, you see our team record, so I mean, you can't really complain about that. I mean, the only thing I can say, you know, I'm out there more, so you know, you just naturally, you know, smoothing things out. I guess that's pretty much it.
Obviously, players want to play. Smoothing things out when he's out there more. What needs to be smoothed out? And this is another one of these questions. A very strange year with a strange offseason and strange training camp. We asked it about Danny Trevathan, who did look better last week. This is another 30-something player who didn't quite have his regular suddenness, didn't quite have his regular quick twitch, his regular burst, his regular acceleration. And you wonder what's going on out there. I remember covering the Bears when Richard Dent tried to make a comeback in 96. That was in 96, I think. And they re-signed him, and he was out there practicing, and it just wasn't there. And you knew it. I mean, you saw the same body, and you saw number 95, and you had these expectations. And I kept asking him about it, and he's like, I just got to get my legs under me. Got to get my legs up under me. And I kept, well, what do you mean by that? And he didn't really articulate what that meant. He just kept saying, I gotta get my legs up under me. And he never did. And the bend wasn't there. The leverage wasn't there. The hip snap, the first step quickness to get a physical advantage wasn't there. And sometimes it goes. Now, I don't think Robert Quinn is done. But look, again, 5 years, $70 million. You better know that this isn't about, well, we got to manage his playing time. We got to make sure that he's able to use his dominant trait and put him in a position to succeed. I'm wary of this. I'm hopeful that the arrow can be pointed in a different direction. Because if you think about already having Akeem Hicks and Khalil Mack out there at the same time, with the number of people it takes. I mean, Akeem Hicks, if you haven't watched, by the way, there are some Twitter feeds that show some of what he does. Olin Kreutz does a nice job of isolating stuff. He's ragdolling guys. What he's doing to double teams on the inside, there should be so many more chances. The Bears should have a lot more sacks than they have. That's another thing, too, is that I know that there are advanced metrics that show hurries and the effect and effectiveness of a pass rush in ways other than sacks. But boy, the value of, like Mac does, sacking the ball instead of the quarterback. Get it out. Get it on the ground. Flip the field. Flip a game. Get home. That kind of thing. That's when it just builds and builds and builds over a game, and things are so close and so close. And then the way I feel watching games now is when you finally break through and throw the quarterback down, they throw a penalty because you did it too violently, or you didn't do it exactly the right way, or what's the rule now? You can't have the force of your body fall on top of a quarterback because you have to somehow defy physics. I don't know if you're supposed to turn in the air and sort of spoon him gently as you land on the ground. It's incredibly frustrating.
I'm thinking of the Seinfeld clip where he's talking about the spitball that he's like, oh, it pauses in midair.
The magic loogie.
Yeah. There's a 90-degree turn.
Yeah, it's what they ask him to do. And now on every quarterback impact, I'm conditioned to expect a flag. Just like how now on every great hit. That used to be, oh, that was just a great hit. That's awesome. And that guy's knocked out and everybody celebrated it. And then the guy got brain damage and nobody cared. And that's how we grew up watching football. And we all know better now. And we know what's happening out there. And we have to contort ourselves intellectually to come to grips with our cognitive dissonance over all of it. But I think every time the quarterback falls down, either somebody touched his head or grazed his ear hole or did something that made it illegal. And the part of it, too, is... The reason why it happens is that's the purview. Hits on the quarterback are the purview of the referee. Not the umpire, not the side judge, not the back judge, the referee. He watches the quarterback, and more often than not, it's a high-profile call, or it's one that goes on him and on his crew if uncalled. Whether it's Jerome Boger or whoever it is. I liked the guy last week. I like the guy who had sort of a Rick Hahn sensibility to him, whoever that was. He was very sort of sensible and clear in the way he made his calls. But I'm not like others who just know every referee by name, because I think if you do, that means you're seeing too much of him, and it's probably a bad sign. But bottom line, get to Teddy Bridgewater, and if you can't get to him, get your hands up, tip the ball, pick it off, get it going the other way, give the offense a short field to start scoring. More points, 30. I am writing down the magic number. That's it. That's what I want. I'm going to put it right here, and it is a 3, and it is a 0, and it's there. That's what I want. Give me that, and life is good, and all is seashells and balloons, and everybody goes home happy, happy, happy if we can just get 30 points. Maybe the other team gets 28. It's okay. It's a win. You get out of there. This segment is brought to you by Toro Snow Blowers. For grizzly winters, you need a Toro Power Max Snow Blower. It's a beast on snow. Act now and get up to $100 off on select Toro Power Max Snow Blowers. See your Toro retailer now. Win winter with a Toro. Maybe I can give Robert Quinn the dreaded Bernstein kiss of life, because the moment I start worrying about a player or thinking somebody's bad, sometimes the very next time out there, really, really good things happen for him, because that just seems to be the way I can affect time, space, and dimension. So here's hoping that's the case. We are going to have a conversation with the Charlotte Observer's Panthers beat writer, Elena Getzenberg. Will give us her thoughts on the Bears' upcoming opponent and how this game stacks up for these teams. So keep it right here. A Panthers expert comes your way next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
He's been playing good. He's a complete quarterback. We seen him a year ago. He was at New Orleans. He really got the system down packed. He's been doing both, standing in the pocket, you know, being able to use that arm strength. He's been playing well with that offense, knowing where his reads at. He's been a great quarterback this year.
Danny Trevathan talking about Teddy Bridgewater. I don't know about a great quarterback, but he is without a doubt a good quarterback about whom the Bears defense needs to be concerned. Let's find out more about the Carolina Panthers from Elena Getzenberg, who is on Twitter at A Getzenberg and is on the Alpamonte Ford hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Elena, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. Elena is the beat writer for the Charlotte Observer, and I think that these teams are in somewhat similar situations where the record says they're winning teams, and yet we're not quite certain how good either one is. And I guess this is an opportunity on Sunday for one to take a step above the other.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, on the Panthers' end of it, they're definitely, I did not expect them to be 3-2. I don't think many people did. So on the Panthers' side, it's been a positive surprise, but I do think they haven't played, you know, they have their toughest opponents still to come, including the Bears. So I think Sunday's going to be very interesting for both teams, maybe a reality check.
I find Matt Rhule to be an interesting case, that how quickly he was able to seemingly get the ear of some of these players and establish himself, even amid all of the extra challenges and protocols of a pandemic. How has he been as he's taken this job? Because some people, some rookie coaches really overdo it. Some of the guys I've been around, and whether it's the Matt Patricias of the world or the people that just have to be so officious and constantly reminding you that they're in charge and being all extra coachy. Doesn't sound like he's done that.
Yeah, I haven't gotten that impression from Matt Rhule at all. I mean, I think the thing with him is he's always, you know, he's not one to, like, take credit for much. Like, he likes to pass it off to his coordinators and his assistants. And I think, you know, a lot of head coaches tend to do that. But one thing from him is, I mean, the situation he was put in, this is, he's only spent 1 year in the NFL as a coach at all, and that was an assistant offensive line coach with the Giants. So this is all very new to him. I mean, with the pandemic and all that, and I think how he's handled it and the fact that the Panthers have won 3 games is a testament to him as a coach. I don't think he's come off at making mistakes that a lot of rookie head coaches do or, you know, known to do. I think overall he's, you know, he's come off fine. I mean, I think he's not one that's like, oh, you know, we're going to say how hard things are or anything like that. He's kind of just one step at a time. And I've been pretty impressed overall about what he's been able to do with this team.
The injury to Christian McCaffrey obviously was a blow, and doing what they've done in the wake of that injury has surprised everyone. It may just be a larger statement about running backs and about what maybe it just doesn't mean that much to have a great running back if you also have a decent running back behind him. It could be a statement to the fungibility of the position. But where has this success been relative to expectations when you first got the news of a multi-week absence for a player that good?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. I mean, the Panthers paid Christian McCaffrey $64 million this offseason, made him the richest running back ever. So it is a rough time for this team to be having success from Mike Davis. But, I mean, when we heard that Christian, you know, had a high ankle sprain, my expectations for this offense were very low. I mean, those first two games, he pretty much was this offense. Teddy hadn't gotten, you know, to where he has the last three games. So expectations were very low for what they could do without Christian. He'd scored four of their five first touchdowns. But they've been able, I mean, Mike Davis has looked incredible. I mean, I didn't know he had that in him. I'm not sure most people did. I thought they'd cut him during training camp. So I think it's really been the ability of Mike Davis. And like you said, I think there are question marks about paying running backs, but it's also a testament to Mike Davis, you know, taking advantage of an opportunity. And he himself has, you know, he leads the league in broken tackles right now. So I do think it tells you a lot about Mike Davis, and maybe someone should be paying him next offseason.
Why has the run defense shown such vulnerabilities?
They've talked a lot about gap integrity and the guys not getting in their gaps. I mean, a big issue for this defense has been Kaywon Short. Their best defensive tackle is out for the season now with a shoulder injury again. And I think he's been injured through the first five games. That's been a huge loss for them. They need him against the run. But it's also, I mean, they've got a young Derek Brown, a rookie, the seventh overall pick, is their lead defensive tackle now. He's going to be double teamed, and they're just learning there. They're hoping to make improvements out of this week, but I don't know. It's definitely an issue, and losing Kaywon Short is only not going to help. So I think that's going to be something they have an issue with all season long.
I asked this question of Mick Mixon yesterday, and I'll ask it of you. What does Teddy Bridgewater not want to do?
What does he not want to do? Just in terms of like,
if you're game planning against him, against him, say, look, I need to take this away, and force him to do this instead.
I mean, if you take away Robbie Anderson, I mean, I think to me, this offense has worked so well because Teddy has gotten on. I mean, you can say there's a lot of other weapons. DJ Moore's great. Curtis Samuel on third downs has been a huge, huge weapon. But the connection he's had with Robbie Anderson is why this offense has worked. So if you take away Robbie Anderson, there are other weapons. There are other things, other places he can go 100%. But Robbie Anderson has been this receiving offense. It's him. His success has been why they've had success overall. So I think if you take away Robbie Anderson, they'll never admit it, but like with the way he's playing right now, that would be a huge, huge loss for Teddy, and he's his go-to guy right now.
The way you're describing some of this stuff, it sounds to me like I would be playing a lot of zone defense. You know, we were just talking to Anthony Heron about it. Like, if what you say about Mike Davis and getting him the ball in space, either through the pass or the run game, and him allowing him with that low center of gravity and active legs to break tackles, this sounds like a gang tackle game. And it sounds like you try to play things fairly close and play fairly tight zones and just force Bridgewater to get first down after first down after first down without turning the ball over. I think the picture's getting a little clearer to hear you describe it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, too, you know, Teddy hasn't been sacked in each of the last two games. So I think the Bears, I mean, coming in have a huge opportunity. If you get pressure on him as well, something he hasn't had to deal with a lot in the last two games, I think that's going to be huge for the Bears defense as well if I was going against Teddy. And I agree with what you said. I mean, say what you will about the quality of the Falcons defense, but last week Mike Davis was just running past guys. And like, if you have to get, like you said, gang tackle him, get to him, because otherwise he's going to make you pay for it. Even, you know, again, say what you will about the Falcons defense, but they are an NFL defense, and what he did to them last week was just a little embarrassing. So getting pressure and they're going to try and get the ball to Mike Davis in space. They use him like they would Christian McCaffrey. So getting to those guys quickly is, I would think, key for Sunday.
We're talking with Elena Getzenberg of the Charlotte Observer, who covers the Carolina Panthers. So what has this week been like with the extra COVID restrictions being sort of on double secret probation because of that positive test on the Falcons?
Yeah, it's not as dramatic as it sounds. I think it sounds like, oh my gosh, they're in this intensive protocol, but really it just means they've either been wearing face masks at practice, which some of them didn't love so much, but it worked, or they've been wearing those face shields that the players can wear on their helmets to kind of just add an extra layer of protection. That's been the biggest thing. There's not actually a ton of changes. The Panthers have not had a positive COVID test this week or in a couple weeks, so I think right now it's just the NFL, like we're seeing around the league, being extra precautious, and it makes practice a little less fun because everyone has to wear masks. But so far, it hasn't actually been a big concern or a problem to deal with.
If I heard correctly, Bridgewater wears that special Oakley mask shield in practice, but not in games, right?
Yeah, he told us, yeah. So he normally wears it in practice, and then just to kind of get a feel for it, see what it's like, and because he does not like, he wants to be able to communicate with his guys and that sort of thing. But he does. He said he hasn't worn it in a game, and he takes it off his helmet just for games.
These are very, very strange times. And I know for you, as all the stuff that I pay attention to that's sort of streaming through my timeline here, the number of mentions of the political significance of Mecklenburg County and just what it represents. And now that early voting is open and everybody's watching so much of the data from there. And we were learning yesterday how involved the Panthers are in using their facilities for get out the vote efforts. It's really been it's been a terrific example they've set.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, one of the cool things that, you know, I just found out about this week is that, you know, they have an early voting site at the stadium. A lot of the Hornets, where the Hornets plays, also, you know, an early voting site. There's a lot of them around Charlotte. But during Sunday's game, people can be voting, like, during the game. You know, that early voting site is still going to be open Sunday during the Panthers game, which I think is pretty cool. But they're all in on it. North Carolina is a huge, huge state in this election, so it's been cool to see how much dedication the Panthers have put into it, and that's coming from the owner up top. So, yeah, it's been really cool, and if you're watching the game in Chicago, you know that people are voting at the same time the game's going on.
Oh, that, so actually at the stadium, just like going up to any other kiosk, or they can do it, instead of buying a hot dog, they can actually go vote. That's amazing.
Absolutely.
Are there fans, any percentage of fans, or are there no fans at all?
Yes. Yeah, so we're in the lovely state of North Carolina. 7% of the stadium is allowed to be full. Truly the most random number.
Okay.
We have no idea how they came across 7. But so there will be, they did not sell out the last game. I think they're close this week. It's going to be about 5,200, 5,200. So there will be, it'll be not super noticeable, but about 5,000 people will be there.
Elena, all very good stuff. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Good health.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That is Elena Getzenberg of the Charlotte Observer. And I should mention that I'm doing the Lawrence Holmes Show again today. So I'm going to be here until 2 o'clock in this very chair. But the chair over there is going to be filled for the Lawrence Holmes Show from noon to 2 by Cole Wright of Marquee Network and also formerly of NFL Network. So he's got all kinds of football thoughts for us, too. And it's going to be a fun couple hours. So I urge you to stick around the score on this fun Friday. And that will be my eighth air shift in the last 5 days. And then I am going to take a nap. That's what I'm going to do. But coming up next, we had some more further information about this apparent and insane candidacy of Tony La Russa for the White Sox managerial job. And we had some people weighing in on the possibility or probability or lack thereof, and a lot being discussed regarding what we talked about yesterday of what I think are disqualifying views regarding sociopolitical protests and the agency of black players and minority players to stand for what they believe in, and Tony La Russa saying some things that I think are disqualifying and make him sound a lot more like Mike Ditka than anybody else, and that's not somebody I want affiliated with any team that I care about. I don't want a team to want that affiliated with them as well. So I don't know if that moves the needle at all regarding any candidacy, but got the latest information on it coming up next on Sports Radio 670, The Score.
That Chicago White Sox job, and he actually came out and said if he had to say it now, he's 75% chance it's Tony La Russa's job if he wants it. Now, that surprised the hell out of me, Eck. I mean, I know he's your boy, 76. The game is what it is. The players are young.
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you?
I tell you what. My gut, I just talked to Tony this morning, but I wouldn't tell you what I talked about. But my gut tells me, no. You know, that's the only situation he would go to, though. Because he has such a great relationship with Reinsdorf.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make any sense, does it? I mean, it just doesn't. But if Tony wants to do it, he's going to do it. And my gut tells me he won't, or they won't. One or the other, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right, he won't or they won't. Exactly. Thank you, Dennis Eckersley on WEEI. That's the Hall of Fame pitcher and former Cub. Say, yeah, obviously. And he said he just talked to him, and he's thinking, no, because what are you doing? Something like that just doesn't seem to make any sense. And I'm glad he phrased it as bluntly as he did and didn't try to talk around it and validate something this insane, because that's what it is. It's insane. I was listening to Parkins yesterday, and Parkins is literally refusing to believe any of it and completely ignoring it because of how ridiculous it is, because of the whole idea of doing something like that for this team. So that was Dennis Eckersley, who said he just spoke to him, saying, no, either he won't or they won't. And when you say they, even if it were Jerry Reinsdorf's first choice, it's not Jerry Reinsdorf's decision, even though he owns the team. And I was reassured of that by White Sox sources yesterday, that this is Rick Hahn's show, this is Rick Hahn's call, and it would have to be Rick Hahn going against everything he said regarding his criteria for the job. Well, Peter Gammons, a longtime baseball expert, was on this morning with Mully and Haw, and here's what he had to say about any possibility.
The White Sox are so close to being really good. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with a couple of young pitchers in time, but I mean, they can find bullpens. We've seen that from all these teams in the playoffs. Most of the guys in the bullpen are guys that they picked up. You know, you just lined up like seven guys that got released in the minor leagues. They throw 95 miles an hour, teach them a couple of pitches, and they arrive. It's an amazing thing. But they can do that. I think he'd be very interested.
What is he talking about with a bullpen? They have a good bullpen. I don't know what he was watching regarding the bullpen, as if the only thing that was holding him back was the issue of a bullpen.
The starting pitching was holding them
right.
back.
Right. That's what they need. They need to go out and get a veteran. I don't know if it's Trevor Bauer, but get some veteran starter. That's just weird. That the immediate thing you would do is say this is a destination if they find a bullpen? I don't know. That was just all very odd. And the other thing that happened yesterday, and the more important thing that happened yesterday, is we learned more about Tony Ditka and how he feels about certain people's ability or right to express themselves and to have a say in expressing a belief and how people are treated and using a platform to try to make a point. He's not a fan of it. And we played two pieces of sound. And the first one, I want you to hear it again. If this is your first time hearing it, and this to me, forget the baseball stuff. Forget the fact that he's 76. Forget everything Rick Hahn said. You want to see, in my world, what disqualifies him from being in a position of authority on this team or any team starts with some of these really unfortunate thoughts that he had. This was 2016 on the Dan Le Batard Show.
The Kaepernick thing. I would not allow it on my team because I think respect for this country, the flag, I know what the Constitution says, but I also know you have some rights as an organization. And I really distrust Kaepernick's sincerity. I was there in the Bay Area when he first was a star, a real star. I never once saw him do anything but promote himself. And all of a sudden now he's a second stringer and he's got this mission and I just don't trust his sincerity. And even if he was sincere, there's ways to express your belief in, you know, some of the issues that face blacks around this country without disrespecting the country you live in or the flag that it represents. Absolutely would not allow it.
The issues that face the blacks in this country. Can I quote Kevin Zipak? Bugger off. Don't let that anywhere near the Chicago White Sox. These Chicago White Sox. Tell that walking, Tony Ditka. And then you think, whoa, 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 hold on, Bernstein. That was 2016. A lot of us have changed the way we've thought about the world. And we've had our views evolve on some things. And Bernstein, you're someone who said that yourself, that you've had evolving thoughts on all kinds of things. Okay. All right. Well, let's hear what he told the Graham Bensinger podcast in 2020.
I was so upset when they kneel down the NFL, because it's not that you don't have something that you dislike. There's a different way to protest it. When you kneel down, you disrespect the flag, the country, and the anthem. And there are men and women are fighting and dying for that. You know, just it's the wrong way to protest. So what I've learned, and I have this eternal debt, which has led to pet and vets, can't do enough for them. I still read as much about the military as I can.
That is Tony Ditka / LaRussa. I mean, that's just gross, that stuff, and willfully ignorant and wrong on so many levels. He doesn't even know. And anybody who says that dumb stuff still isn't trying and is actually trying hard to not understand what the players are protesting, what they're saying, what they're trying to let you know, and how they're trying to express themselves. The only way to still think those things in 2020, to still think any of it, is about a flag or about troops or about veterans. It is to get it wrong on purpose. And that's what Tony Ditka is doing there. He's getting it wrong on purpose. That's not allowed. And certainly not this team, not this time, that he's going to walk in a clubhouse and then tell them what they can and can't do and what expression is and is not acceptable to him on the Change the Game team with Tim Anderson in there. I love what Craig Calcaterra wrote, our regular baseball contributor. You know what's completely out of line? And you know what's completely disrespectful? Telling a black person that he or she is wrong about their perception of race in America. Who the hell is Tony La Russa to tell Adam Jones about what it's like to be a black man in Major League Baseball? Who the hell is Tony La Russa to tell a black man how Major League Baseball welcomes or does not welcome black people and black voices? Who is he to tell Colin Kaepernick where he can and cannot protest? And how, in light of the movement professional sports on that score in the past year, is La Russa considered even a remotely appropriate candidate to manage a team with multiple young black and Latino stars? And he concludes with this. La Russa may have the most sterling resume of any living baseball manager, but the industry has changed, and he is now woefully unqualified for the job he is seeking. Amen. Woefully unqualified indeed. That cannot be allowed any more oxygen. And if he's interviewed, he'd better answer for all of this. Because the only way to think the things that he continues to think is to try to get it wrong because you want to get it wrong. Because somehow you find this evolution threatening to you or threatening to your sense of world order or making you uncomfortable or feel that your level of power or some sort of hierarchy is eroding. And that's why Tony Ditka gets it wrong on purpose. Keep Tony Ditka away from these Chicago White Sox as best you can. And if there is a courtesy interview involved, you give him that. You say, we'll call you if we need you. But I was happy to hear what Dennis Eckersley said. Very, very pleased to hear what he said about, yeah, you know, what are they doing? This doesn't make any sense. Because, no, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't. The 847 says, can we stop talking about Tony La Russa? We used one segment. We talked about the Bears for the entire show. We're going to talk more Bears, but we did have the comments from Dennis Eckersley and the comments from Peter Gammons from earlier today. And if it makes you uncomfortable to talk about them, that's not my problem. The 262 says, "Oh, to be able to see the 815 texts right now. Oh, they never disappoint. They absolutely never disappoint." And another 262. Where's 262? Is that Wisconsin? It says, the people you're talking to think Ditka's a compliment, not an insult. I don't care what they think. Anybody who understands that calling him Tony Ditka makes the exact point it does, that you're talking about a dinosaur atavist who isn't the right guy for this team at this time. And what would be the long-term plan there? How long do you think that he's going to come in and take this job and manage Tim Anderson and Eloy Jimenez and Luis Robert? And he's going to come on. I mean, the whole thing is insane. The whole thing is just preposterous. And I wish I could totally make it go away. I love the way Parkins is dealing with it. I guess I don't have the mental discipline to do what he does, where he can just he's just creating his own reality where none of this is happening and none of this is true, and that's the world in which he's going to live. And more power to him, because that's great. If you can do stuff like that, you could end up being a really, really happy person and say, this is just it doesn't exist, and I'm not going to live in that world. I admire that. I wish I had that ability in a lot of respects, believe me, and with all the doom scrolling that we do these days, and especially with my brain completely fried after this week of not even remembering exactly what shift I'm doing at any given time. And I should mention that we're going to have a fun show coming up next. Cole Wright is going to come in and sit in that seat over there, and we're going to do the Lawrence Holmes show for another couple hours. Roy Wood Jr. is going to be joining us, the comedian and journalist and actor. He's a huge Cubs fan, so I imagine he's still kind of licking his wounds right now. He's going to join us at 1:25 because it's not the easiest time to be a Cub fan, especially because these other teams get to the playoffs and they keep hitting. They keep hitting home runs. The Cubs, they stop. Our experience with the Cubs has been really painful because they do it the regular season, and then it's like, okay, and then the games matter, and then they're all bad, and they're out, and it's like they're never up. And I turn on these games, and they're bashing the ball everywhere. I love the big, fat Korean guy. He's awesome. G-Man Choi, and that celebration afterward, and watching his big, jiggling belly as he's rounding the bases after hitting that thing 450 feet. He does this awesome bat flip too. That was like low-key taunt with that bat flip, and it wasn't over the top, it wasn't showing anybody up. But if you watch Korean League baseball, that's an art of knowing just when and how high and how to do it so gently, and he had it just perfect. And then he jiggles his way around the bases. They got to get him on the I'm Fat podcast, because that's fun. It's not Danny Vogelbach, where like every bit of him is large, but he carries it all in the front. Like that's right there for you in the front of the store. And the celebration afterward was just so great. And you think, why can't the Cubs actually hit in the playoffs? I don't think I'm ever going to be able to figure it out. And I don't know. Theo Epstein's got to be thinking the same thing. Jed Hoyer's got to be thinking the same thing watching these other teams. It's like they didn't know you were just supposed to keep doing it, and they decided to stop. Well, we are going to do the Lawrence Holmes show coming up in just a couple of minutes. We'll bring Cole Wright in, and I'll be here for another couple hours on Sports Radio 670, The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.